If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Captain?
Not here.
Captain?
Report.
Signatures detected.
Shields up.
Signatures detected.
Red alert.
Context Starfleet Command.
What's happening?
Context Starfleet Command.
Delay that order.
Context Starfleet Command.
This is the captain.
Context Starfleet Command.
Get out of my chair. Chair.
We have engaged the Klingons.
Klingons.
Welcome to The Greatest Discovery. It's a new Star Trek podcast from the makers of The Greatest Generation. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Ben Harrison.
With us today is this is a real, like, you might have noticed the empty seat next to us on the feed.
Mm-hmm.
We're about to bring out our first guest. You might know her from the credits.
Yeah.
Of The Greatest Discovery.
Acquaintance of the pod.
Yeah. Best in the business is what we call her.
Aww. Yeah.
Wendy Pretty.
Thanks, guys. It's going to be fun.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah. What is your late night show entrance music, you think? Like, what does the band play when you come out?
Or what's your wrestling entrance music, alternatively, when you're coming down the ramp?
I mean, it should be something roller skating related.
Yeah.
Is that the roller skates and key song? Like, I got a brand new pair of roller
skates. No, my roller skates are not brand new, though. So they're like,
oh, yeah.
They're well-worn roller skates that I'm rolling in on.
Yeah, the roller skates and key song doesn't evoke some of the intensity of the roller derby world. That, I mean,
you can never elbow someone in the face hearing that song.
Only for comedy sake.
Did Star Trek have entrance music when you would take to the rink?
No, well, I had an intro line for the announcers.
Wow.
What was that?
There were two of them, actually, but the last one I used was Live Long and Roster. Because, you know, you have to, like, make the roster for the game. So it's like Live Long and Roster, Star Trek Warp 9. And then the other one I used was Phasers Set to Kill.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Badass.
Wendy, is that a Wesley acting ensign tote bag that I see hanging on the wall behind you?
100%. It is.
Why didn't we do your job interview from this location? I think you would have made it a lot easier on us to hire you if we saw all this
stuff.
Yeah,
we would have canceled all the subsequent interviews we had scheduled.
Yeah, I'm still really confused as to why you guys hired me at all. It's a running question in my mind.
I'm not.
Yeah. Well, so you're joining us today on the show because we have a bunch of burning questions coming in from the Friends of DeSoto. You're going to set them up on the tee, and Adam and I are going to take batting practice on them.
Sounds fun. Let's do it.
Yeah, let's get into it. And I don't mean to make it sound like we're going to beat our fans with baseball bats also. I just want to make that clear.
No fans will be harmed. Spike McCrieger wrote us a 5-star review and said, have you fellas thought about doing any other podcasts about shows or movies that you might be slightly embarrassed about?
Oh, man. Well, I think that the Santa Monica Mountains podcast would be an example of one that we actually put into production.
Right.
And, you know, we toy with the idea of starting to make that out from behind the paywall, making that a real podcast. Because I don't think that it has a 100% overlap with Star Trek fans. So I feel like a lot of people are like, why are you doing this? Stop. Don't make me download it.
Those were also our earliest reviews for Greatest Gen.
That's true.
So we really came full circle with that project.
Yeah. I don't know if you feel this way, Adam, but as we have tossed the ideas back and forth of potentially making another project outside of the Greatest Gen family of products. I hesitate a little bit to make it a review show just because I feel like that is territory that we are so thoroughly ensconced in with Greatest Gen that I think it would be more fun for us to do something that was outside of that milieu.
Yeah, I agree. And yet, like, the question is specifically about shows or movies. Like, I don't know. I don't know if I have another one of those in me. I think you're right. I think whatever comes next is going to be different and not reviewy.
True crime.
Yeah.
We'll investigate.
Yeah.
Something.
I don't think anyone's ever done a true crime show the way we could do it.
Yeah.
We don't know what we're talking about here.
Wait. Didn't we have some Star Trek related crime that we wanted to investigate at some point? I'm trying to remember.
I don't remember any of the shows we do.
Yeah.
Just drain out of my ears right after we hit stop.
It's really remarkable. And right now we have so much runway, especially over on The Greatest Generation, our other hit Star Trek podcast, that when we release an episode, I'm trying to tweet about it the morning it comes out to be like, hey, a new episode came out. And like, that's as creative as I can get at this point, because I do not remember anything about the episode in particular.
Can you two cybok me for a second? I need to share something personal and humiliating.
You got some pain to share? Oh, buddy.
It must be exposed and reckoned with.
This morning, I'm putting myself together. And I'm putting on clothes, as you do. And I'm like, I had taken out a pair of shorts. And I remember looking at these shorts and going like, I can't wear those shorts today. That's not going to go with the shirt I want to wear. And so I go on around about my business and I'm like, I need to find another pair of shorts. I decide, no, the first pair of shorts is the one I want to wear today. But where did I put it? And I look in my short stack. They're not in there.
What?
And they're not in the hamper. And they're not in the bathroom, and they're not on the bed, and they're not on the Peloton where I hang clothes often. They're not anywhere. And I'm getting upset because I just had them in my hand. Yeah. Do you have any guesses where they were?
Were they on your booty?
They were on my birdie. I had put them on. I texted my wife this morning, and I described that situation. And I was like, this is right around the corner for you.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Shit is falling apart mentally. I don't know. Is that what three shows a week does?
Yeah. Yeah, just about.
Just stacking and racking. I can't think anymore.
I mean, less humiliating than my recent shorts mishap, but humiliating nonetheless.
Sure. No hurdles in these shorts.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. I think you might have answered it, Ben. Like, while we have dabbled in the show and movie lifestyle outside of Greatest Gen.
Yeah.
I would say to great success. Maybe that's it in that genre.
What do you think? Do you think that there's a TV show or movie genre that needs the Ben and Adam treatment, or that needs the Ben, Adam, and Wendy treatment since you're on the show today?
I think you guys should keep doing awesome movies in the bonus feed. That's my recommendation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We still haven't done Gremlins 2. I think about that once a week.
There's a movie-shaped hole in my podcast heart. I mean, once Movie Crush went away, I kind of lost that opportunity. Like,
yeah.
Guesting on other shows is how we've most frequently done that.
Yeah. It was nice that Chuck was able to get you in for so many of the P.T. Anderson movies also.
Like, I know. I mean, he just kept calling and texting.
I was putatively the Coen Brothers reviewer with him on that show, but it just, you know, I never heard the phone ring once.
That's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
Those calls were always screened because you were making a baby, I guess.
No, I answered. I just said, hey, man, I'm really busy right now.
Which is also conversely why I answered every time.
Well, let's get on to the next question because I got to wrap this up. There's some strollers and crap I need to buy.
Right.
The next one's an audio question.
Okay, let's hear this audio question.
Dear Ben and Adam, this is Bjork Tribe from the Discord channel. Here's my question. You've met a few crew members and done exceptional interviews, but how much fan fervor do you have to control before actually meeting them? And has it become easier over time? Thank you so much. Take care.
Wow. Thanks, Bjork Tribe. Thanks for that great audio quality, too. Wow.
Yeah, nice work. That's how we like the audio.
I would never get nervous about talking to a cast member of a Star Trek program.
Not a chance.
I don't know why people think that.
Crickets.
Is that what the question was about?
Yeah.
I interpreted that completely wrong.
How much fan fervor do you have to suppress?
Oh.
Okay, I get it now. I was thinking of it in the Sam, Adam, Brad context of like making friends with listeners of the show.
Oh.
Context of the question. Oh. Did I?
Oh man, I heard it a third way. Okay. I heard it
what
like
was that way?
How much do you have to like hold people off while you interview the person?
Oh. Wow, so we have three competing interpretations. I think we answer all three versions of the question. So when we have been lucky enough to interview people from the show, it has typically either been via tape sync, which means it's remote and they're in their office or whatever, and we're just recording their end of the conversation and merging it in with ours, or we're in a controlled location like a hotel room or somewhere where other people can't go. I don't really think it would
an
be
alley.
Yeah. I don't think it would be possible to like get an interview with Frakes on the convention floor because like, yeah,
no.
Everybody wants a piece of him on the convention floor.
I mean, you wouldn't, but I can understand.
No, I would see him from a distance and respect his privacy and his autonomy as a person.
Right.
But other people might not.
No.
I was once in a bathroom stall at an airport, standing next to a friend of the show, acquaintance of the pod, John Hodgman, fellow Max Fun host. We were both having a pee. We'd been on the same flight, but it was a coincidence. And a fan came up to him while he was urinating and tried to have a fan interaction with him. And he said, "I will speak to you outside of the bathroom if you don't mind." And he was really nice about it, but it was also just like, wow. That is a kind of fame I never want.
How in your head do you get when we've had the opportunity to do interviews? Like, is it an effortful thing to chill out the fan in order to do good work in those contexts? Or is it just, or does being super chill just come naturally to you?
I think that I'll cite our recent Mary Wiseman interview as an example of this. Mary is such a generous soul and so cool and down to earth. I'm a huge fan of hers, obviously, but the second you're on the Zoom with her, talking to her, she's like a very like approachable and normal person. And I think a lot of the work of putting me at ease was done by her, just by being who she was, you know?
Yeah, the right interview subject can really solve for a lot of that.
Yeah. How about you? Do you get up in your head?
No, not really. I mean, where that tends to be a disaster, I think, is when you don't have anything to say. Like the person who wants to come up to a celebrity without anything in the chamber, just to have the interaction.
Yeah.
Is where I think people get into a lot of trouble. And I think we've been fortunate in our interviews to have things to say and have questions to ask. And no, I don't feel nervous for those times at all. I mean, I've interviewed a lot of people over the years professionally, and so have you. And I think that aspect to my career has been like, has burned out whatever nerves I might have in sitting down with someone of any kind of esteem. Like, I just really try to approach it as a person interviewing another person kind of thing. How would I want to be interviewed by someone? I don't want to be sitting with someone who's nervous or fidgety or whatever. Like, I just want a chill hang. And as an interviewer, I'm trying to provide the chill hang.
Yeah.
And that's how you get great answers to questions, too.
Yeah, I think that if you're being genuine and it's not the Chris Farley show, and you're asking questions that make them think and, you know, provide fertile ground for them to give interesting answers, then it just turns into a conversation that, you know, is somewhat formal and somewhat strange in its nature. It's not a, you know, a conversation with a random stranger on the bus, but it, you know, there's a kind of a physics to how these things flow once you get into a rhythm.
Right. Right.
Yeah. You guys have done a lot of cool interviews in the past. So if people haven't heard those, they should scroll back in the feed and and listen to them, and maybe another interview coming up soon.
Fingers crossed.
Hell yeah. Plug the feed.
Yeah, you got to check out that back catalog. There's good stuff back there.
Go back in that in the stacks.
In the stacks.
What was the second and third interpretation of this question? So I've already forgotten.
We've gone through two interpretations. I think the last one was the like when we.
How do you get to be friends with us if you're a viewer?
Yeah, when we talk to our fans of our podcast.
Uh-huh. Well, we'd need a job opening first. That's how you really get in there.
Yeah, I mean, we famously haven't been doing the meet and greet after live shows on our 2022 tour just to, you know, hopefully minimize the risk of us getting sick. I've heard a lot of our colleagues.
It hasn't stopped people from just walking backstage, though.
That's true. Yeah. I've heard a lot of colleagues in the podcast world that go on tours lamenting getting sick on tour. And I feel really lucky that neither of us did this year. You know, there's always the LA show.
But, God, I hope not. If we can just get through that.
Yeah. When we have done meet and greets, I feel like we do really get all kinds, like people who come up to us with a bunch of stuff that they want to share, or a funny story that they want to tell us, or a sad story that they want to tell us. On one end of the spectrum, and people who come up to us and are tongue-tied for one reason on the other end of the spectrum. But I think that generally speaking, we've had really, really great. With the exception of that one guy that took great umbrage with something that Adam said at our first Chicago show, I'd say that all in all, our fan interactions have been really positive and cool.
I do love being reminded of that, X-Fan. Do you think, follow-up question for me, my question's for Ben. And also Wendy, I think, because she's probably witnessed this a bunch. And less so Adam. I don't think he's got an answer to this. Do you think fan interactions have made you more comfortable just being out in the world and socializing generally?
Get a life.
That and Lexapro.
Okay. I kind of think so. There's nothing like hanging out after a show and talking to 100 different people about 100 different things.
Yeah. And I have some social anxiety, so that is kind of like exposure therapy for me. Like, it's like rinse, repeat. Like, if it didn't go perfectly with the last person, there's 20 more people to try.
It is a little fucked up, though. You're right. Like, in the same way that I will replay an awkward experience that I've had with someone, you know, just going about my business out in the world.
Yeah.
That line will come back to me later on that night or the next day, like, oh shit, did I fuck up what should have been a pleasant interaction with someone and like give them a bad memory?
Yeah.
I'm in my head about that.
We get messages that go the other way though, like people that are like, hey, I'm super sorry I put my foot in my mouth with you after the show in Cleveland, and we're like, whatever you said, we don't remember it, you're all good.
Right. Look. You and I will always remember Denver guy.
Yeah.
No one's going to do worse than Denver guy.
Denver guy knows who he is.
What was that like for you, Wendy, when you were at the DC show? I think that was that was the first time since you had been hired that we were all together like on a job and you got to see how things worked. What was that like for you?
It was really fun. Yeah, I got to work the merch table that night and talk to a lot of people and hung out at the bar a little bit before the show. And everybody's just really, I was surprised that everybody's so like grateful. Everybody's just really, really grateful for the show and grateful for what we do, I guess.
Yeah. I usually think of the show as being a burden on our fans, and the gratitude thing always trips me out.
Yeah. I was honestly surprised. I thought people would be, you know, joking around and stuff, but people were very, very sincere and it was really sweet.
That's awesome.
I love it. Should we do another question?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, Rogue Laren asks, I would be interested to hear how you came to be as concerned with the rights of others as you are. It seems rare.
Oh. Well, I mean, Star Trek in no small part, I would say. I feel like I grew up on seeing people take the rights of others seriously and fighting for them on TV, so I feel like those are good role models. And I think my folks are like that too. You know, I wouldn't say that I grew up in a strident activist style household. Like, my parents are both, you know, normal people who, you know, live relatively quiet lives and whatnot, but they like took me to protests when important things were getting protested and stuff. And I think they have those values and try to impart them to me. So yeah, I feel like I just kind of come by them by my upbringing mostly. How about you, Adam?
I think my answer is being around you, Ben. I think my serious answer is I don't really know any other way to be besides, like, I know I come off on the show as like anhedonic and weird, but like I really am a deeply feeling person and I do carry a lot of empathy for other people inside me.
Don't let the anhedonic persona fool you, folks. I've seen this guy get into some hedonistic shit.
Piles and piles of bodies. Yeah.
And he cares about all their rights.
I know. I think one aspect that has like changed over the years since working together, though, is like how often I talk about it. Like I feel like you walk around in the world like with the values you have, and at least from my perspective, I'm not often like getting into conversations about the rights of others and how they need to be defended and so forth. Like, but I mean, when you are a professional talker the way we are, that stuff comes up.
I think that's a great point. Like, I think that one of the things that was a real trial by fire for us when we started the show is like learning how stuff hits when it's not just you and me saying it to each other. And so like, I think that the show kind of made us better at considering things from other people's vantage points, and or at least doing our best to consider them from other people's vantage points. And we talk about that stuff all the time behind the scenes when we're editing an episode, like, did this wording make this sound a way I don't want it to sound or whatever, and you know, we'll edit something or choose not to based on a conversation like that. So I think that like if you're lucky enough to get to scream about Star Trek into a microphone as your job,
at some point you're going to talk about values and the rights of others.
Yeah. When you come from public radio, they do that like for, that's like a professional obligation with the public radio world.
Yeah, I think your editorial policy is a lot more fun than public radio's. But yeah, I mean, thinking about how something will hit for someone who's different from you is the like the mental exercise that you have to go through, right? Like, for me, this is not a big deal, but if someone heard it in a different life experience, how is it going to impact them? And so like that's some of the thought process I try to put behind things when we're choosing what goes in and what goes out, you know, just being aware of other people's perspective on various issues.
What, did it surprise you just how much of Ben we need to cut out of every show that would be, you know, hurtful to different types of people?
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that your average like greatest discovery record session is like 2 or 3 hours, and just so much stuff gets pulled out.
Hey, IMDb Burton Ernie, will ya? Do puppets die?
You know what, like to put that question in a different way that is a little more serious, like you left a what I think is like a cool and legit job to come work for us, who are, and I'm gesturing at me and Ben, like us. How did you, and I'm going to cut out any compliment that you include in your answer. How did you know we weren't monsters? How does anyone know that they aren't in an environment like this?
Wendy's trying to figure out how to answer without saying, well, you are monsters.
TBD on that. I'm not sure yet. I'll let you know when I figure it out. No, I remember asking you guys like what your measurement of success was. Like, what are you after in it? You know, is it stats? Is it this or that? And you guys were just like, no, we just want to have fun. We want to have fun hangs every week and talk about Star Trek and make each other laugh, you know? And so I kind of, that was my biggest indication last fall of like, okay, these guys are what's on the package.
We're not soul sellers.
We might be more successful if we had a more strategic goal than that, but that really is the goal.
You're, yeah, you're doing fine.
Let's Drink About It had a more like carefully articulated editorial policy The Greatest Generation does.
The drinking policy is the same, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Highly encouraged. Should we do another question?
Yeah.
Yeah, this one's going to have you put some captains in order. So it's from 80s Hard Rockin'.
Okay.
And they want you to rate all of the Star Trek main show captains in Shimoda order.
Okay. Oh, in the most Shimoda.
Yeah. I guess most to least Shimoda, least to most.
I think we probably want to go least to most, right?
So who is the most serious, rock solid, not a mess?
Yeah.
Not space drunk.
Because, like, I feel like Michael Burnham is kind of an interesting test case for the ethos of how we answer this, because she's so fucking serious.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But also a bit of a mess.
I think, God, it doesn't get more serious than Picard, right?
Yeah.
I think he's the anti-Shimoda to me.
He's kind of the anti-Shimoda.
Yeah. Like, loosen up, Picard. Jeez. Roll around in the mud a little bit.
I feel like Jonathan Archer and Benjamin Sisko are down there with him in the low Shimoda end of the graph.
Some low S on those guys?
Low Shimoda quotient.
Yeah. I wouldn't know about Archer, but I think that checks out with Sisko, except Sisko enjoyed a drink from time to time.
He did.
He yelled a lot, too.
Yeah.
Like, a lot.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, so let's put Sisko above Archer. More Shimoda quotient than Archer.
Is Janeway above Archer and above Sisko?
I feel like Janeway, like, actually knows how to cut loose, unlike some of the lower Shimoda quotient captains we've mentioned so far.
Okay. So slot her below Sisko and Archer.
Oh, I'm saying above, because she, like, she has the capacity for silliness.
We're saying the same thing.
Yeah.
I said below, but I... All right, you get it.
All right, we need like one of those collaborative online workspaces where we can draw a diagram while we talk about this.
Maybe let's meet in the middle now. Like, let's go with the most Shimoda and then like meet those captains in the middle. So
yeah,
like Freeman has got to be the most, right?
Freeman is up
She's
there.
A comedy captain on a comedy show.
Yeah. I feel like Pike and Kirk are kind of in competition with each other for second most, though.
But which Kirk?
Not me, you idiot. Him!
Ooh. Let's take, like, Kirk as an average.
Kirk's the only one with two names on this list.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, three.
Yeah.
Because we're talking about movie captains. Yeah.
Yeah.
Amalgam of Kirk. Use that.
Yeah. I think we got to average Kirk out into one thing.
Right, that's fair.
Because, I mean, Pike, we have a few different performances also.
It's true. Damn.
I would say Anson Mounts is now the definitive, but we've still got
sure.
Bruce Greenwood and original flavor.
Yeah.
But I think that Anson Mounts is a much more fun Pike than we've ever seen before. So.
Yeah, like loose but in control.
Yeah.
That's the Pike Shimoda.
Is he a higher Shimoda quotient or less high Shimoda quotient than Kirk?
I think he's less high.
Yeah.
I think Kirk is more Shimoda quotient.
Okay, so that's our top three. It's Freeman,
yeah.
Kirk, Pike. Number one, number two, number three.
Correct.
Is Burnham number four?
No, I don't think so. I think she skews less Shimoda.
Okay.
More serious.
So is maybe Janeway's number four,
yeah.
Burnham number five?
I kind of want to slide Burnham more toward Picard, to be honest.
Wow. Okay. So I think we've got Sisko right behind Janeway, then Burnham, then Archer, then Picard.
That's what I got. Yeah.
I think that's a really good power ranking. I feel really good about this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I feel like we really worked it out.
Nice job.
Great question, 80s Hard Rockin'.
Yeah, indeed.
And great name.
Yeah.
Okay, here's a technical one that we've got next from Evil Mike 42, who asks, what would happen if you stuffed a turned off holodeck room full of people shoulder to shoulder and then turned it on and had everyone try to scramble away?
Man, I guess it probably depends on if the safeties are on first and foremost, and then secondarily, what the program is. Like, is it jungle Worf workout program where there's a bunch of plants and rocks and bombed out buildings to engage in blade combat with, or what?
What we really need is that the camera whips up to the sign that says this holodeck max occupancy is this number of people. What is the holodeck program where we saw the most people? Was that TNG's Robin Hood story? That was like the whole bridge crew on that one.
Yeah, but I think that was Q.
I would prefer if you addressed me as His Honor, the High Sheriff of Nottingham.
It felt like a holodeck story, but I think Q actually took them back to
Sherwood
Forest.
So, I mean, but a ton of the crew goes and visits the all-inclusive resort
right.
on Voyager.
Oh, yeah. That's true.
Yeah.
A lot of people go to that.
I think that might be it. People party down in the all-inclusive resort.
So what would happen if you told everyone the cops were coming
mm-hmm.
at the house party and they all go running? What would happen? I think eventually you hit the wall, right? Someone hits the wall.
Yeah.
You can't just go running forever.
You hit side schlong guy, fall over, covered in greasy sun cream.
Probably smells great.
Mm.
That suntan oil has that specific smell.
It's got that jojoba in it.
Smells like the 80s.
Got to get the jojoba oil.
Yeah. Yeah, that stuff's great. I like it when other people wear it.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't need that. My skin's too fair.
Mm. Yeah, we have the same problem, my friend.
Yeah. So I think that's the answer. Someone's hitting a wall, but not everyone.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think there's probably a drag to it. Like if more people are on one side of the holodeck, they're taking most of the program with them. If there's an elasticity to the program, maybe the side where there's fewer attendees, those are the wall hitters.
Right.
Because the computer's got to make a choice, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. It's like the trolley problem, but for photons.
Exactly. Yeah.
Whoa.
That's my answer.
All right, we got another audio question from one of your favorite people.
Hey, Ben and Adam, it's J Poop from the Discord. I just want to know what your favorite jelly bean flavors are. And as a follow-up, what's your least favorite jelly bean flavor? Assume you have the fancy Jelly Belly jelly beans. Thanks, guys.
Wow, the voice of J Poop.
J Poop rules. J Poop, in my mind, a big, big part of why the Discord works over there.
Yeah. J-Poop, also the developer of at least a couple of greatest gen themed games. There's the Echo Papa 607 game.
Yeah.
And there was like a platformer too, right?
J-Poop also came to a live show and then left without saying hi, like trying to be cool about it. But I was like, J-Poop, next time, you got to tell us you're going to be there.
Yeah.
We missed out on our chance to meet J-Poop in person.
Yeah. And look at J-Poop's driver's license and see that it says J-Poop on it and laugh.
Yeah, and ask about J-Poop's.
Where's your family from?
Yeah.
Is that like an Eastern European name or what?
Are you like on parole, J-Poop? All right, favorite and least favorite J-Beans.
I think I have two favorites, buttered popcorn and watermelon.
What the fuck? That was exactly my answer.
Wow.
We've never talked about this.
We haven't. Man.
Whoa.
Maybe this is like a good like dating app question for people who are looking for podcast partners.
Wow.
There's like a weirdly high correlation of like on mic compatibility with jelly bean preferences.
In my mind, I was like, well, buttered popcorn so divisive. There's no chance Ben's on that one. And also watermelon, like that's a Jolly Rancher favorite. Of course, Ben's not going to say that. And two for two. Double daily double.
Yeah. Really solid.
Shit.
I used to really profoundly hate the licorice flavored jelly bean. And I've really come around on them lately.
Of course you have.
And I don't know if that leaves us on the opposite sides of that issue, Adam.
I'm going to say cinnamon is my least favorite. I feel like cinnamon mixes the least with any other flavor of jelly bean. And I often confuse it with a flavor that I'd like. So I've got a handful of reds. I'm throwing them down. There's like two cinnamons in with like a watermelon, a cherry, and a strawberry. That's not fun. It's not good at all.
It's a hell of a combination.
Yeah.
They're often ruining my handful of jelly beans. So I'm going to say cinnamon is my antibean. What about you,
Wendy?
That's
a really good point.
I don't know. I haven't had jelly beans in ages, so Maybe I have to go discover this.
Wow.
Do you remember when jelly beans were huge? Like when we were kids, they were like beans, like honking beans.
Yeah. Well, I think Jelly Bellies have always been the same size, but they're, yeah, like they're, like when you get like an Easter candy haul or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, like the Brock's jelly beans of old times. Yeah, that's just too much.
Yeah, kind of disgusting when you think about it. I was going to say my least favorite is blueberry, just because I don't have much use for them.
Also, you could just eat a blueberry. Yeah. They're the same size.
They're the same size, and one is bad for you and one is less bad for you. So
you like a regular blueberry?
I'd prefer a regular blueberry. Yeah.
Hold up. I'm going to give you what you want here, Ben.
Okay.
Please tell me why blueberries are bad for me.
I didn't say they were bad for you.
Yeah, you did. You said they were both bad, blueberries and blueberry jelly beans. Did I mishear that?
I said they're less bad than jelly beans. I don't know.
Okay.
That doesn't mean not good.
Okay. All right, fine.
I'm not a nutritionist. I don't know if fruit is overall a good thing or not. I'm sure that you can have too much fruit sugar in your diet. Probably.
You know what?
Maybe.
Any of you are coming to us for nutrition advice.
Mm.
You get what you get. It's a bad idea.
Do your own research.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to, oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
What?
Sounds like nonsense.
What is going on?
All right. Whidbey Island fan asks, in the Star Trek pantheon, which regular cast member had the most elaborate makeup work? I'm wondering whether they offed Hemmer because it was too difficult to keep up with his antenna.
Whoa. Man, we're answering these questions on the day that our episode about season one, episode 10 of Strange New Worlds is out. And I think we spoiled the death of Hemmer for a couple of people with our tweet about the episode.
Oh, no.
How did that make you feel?
I mean, it's their fault for not watching the best new Star Trek series while it was coming out.
Everything was yesterday. Today, you're wasting my motherfucking time.
Yeah.
What I replied to one person was, hey, it's a comedy show. Maybe it's just a joke.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah.
Maybe I didn't mean it.
Yeah.
You should have quad boxed that apology. Like, hey, it's a comedy.
Honestly, the previously on ruined it for me when I watched that episode. I was like, oh, Hemmer's going to die. I knew it right away.
Right.
So,
yeah. When they give too much attention to a character in the pre-roll, you know, death is near.
Too much attention to a character and specifically what that character considers to be the satisfactory conditions before they die. Like, wow, why did you bring that up, Hemmer?
Well, yeah, I mean, the moment everything that's broken is fixed, that's pretty much my way out.
Yeah.
So
pretty much jump off a mountain.
No one even asked him
at that moment.
Yeah. Regular cast member.
Yeah.
Most elaborate makeup work. I want to say Data as a weird alt to the obvious answer, right?
Hmm.
He's sitting in that chair. He's getting the airbrush thing. He's getting the contact lenses every single day. And I know Worf is probably a more obvious answer. but at least he's not wearing shit in his eyes.
Yeah.
And he's not getting body paint on him every day. There's something, God, what Brent Spiner had to go through every day to be Data.
Yeah.
I got a lot of respect for that. That just seems very uncomfortable.
Worf had to have mouth prosthetics, right, though, which I feel like, yeah, like eyes and mouth.
Hey, I'm going to put you on the spot, man. Would you rather have body paint or stuff in your mouth as a job?
I kind of think I'd rather have the body paint than the stuff in my mouth, personally.
Yeah. I don't know. My skin is so sensitive,
yeah,
and like prone to breakouts, even as a 40 something year old man. Like, my skin would just be permanently a mess if I were body painted all the time. I'd probably have to choose mouth stuff.
Yeah, that was the performer that originally played Arium had to stop doing the part because of that, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It's a thing.
Both TNG characters, interestingly enough.
Yeah. I mean, I think Saru definitely, like, Saru's got stuff in his eyes. Does he have stuff in his mouth? He might.
You know what? That's...
He's got stuff on his hands.
That's it.
He's in those crazy hoof shoes.
That's the answer to this question. It was obvious. It was too obvious for us to say first. Yeah, it's Saru.
Yeah.
Doug Jones is being tortured every day on set.
I feel like the fact that he's a good actor is an amazing bonus on the fact that he is willing to subject himself to the roles that he inhabits.
He's wearing a Gorn's amount of costuming and still expressing what appear to be real feelings, yeah, about things.
It's pretty wild.
Yeah. His whole career has been that.
Yeah.
So Hemmer didn't get killed off because of his antenna, sounds like.
I don't think so.
I don't think so. I mean, I will not be surprised if they write him back onto the show. I will put it that way.
Hmm. I'm going to put that in the predictions file.
Yeah.
His twin brother, Bemmer.
I'm not a jerk.
I noticed no one was grieving my brother hours after his death.
Should we go on to another question?
Yeah, next one is another question from the Discord server. It's from 359 Truther.
Hello, Adam and Ben. When you look back and consider all the myriad of new Trek, do you think certain shows would be more successful if released all at once to be binge-watched and enjoyed for hours, perhaps late into the night? Thank you. I'll take my answer off the air.
Wow. That seems to be kind of only a Netflix thing now, right? Like, is Netflix the only network that's still doing that? Streamer? Not network.
Is this at the time of their release?
Yeah. Like Netflix does.
Like releasing the whole season.
Yeah.
Yeah, where all 13 episodes come out all at once.
I like the anticipatory feeling of waiting. Like, I don't know. Like, do I wish I could have all the answers and have climbed off of all of the cliffs in new Star Trek right away? Yeah, but... And would it make our jobs easier as professional Star Trek podcasters? Sure.
Yeah, I guess it would.
I think there's something nice about the rhythm of watching something week in and week out. And then after the fact, choosing to binge it if that's what you're going for, you know?
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that Discovery might lend itself more to that style of release than some of the other shows. When we've had the opportunity to go back and binge watch Discovery, I have felt like it responds well to that kind of watching. You know, we're getting ready for another episode where we're completely rewatching season one of Strange New Worlds right now, and binge watching that doesn't feel like it's gaining anything from that experience because it's so episodic. It doesn't really benefit one episode to watch it right after the previous one, but I think Discovery maybe could.
I think writing for television's got to be more forgiving, though, right? When you're making an episode and referring to something 2 weeks ago instead of 2 hours ago.
Yeah.
It's got to be more forgiving to create in that way.
Totally. I sometimes wonder, like, I have enough trouble if I'm writing a feature-length script, you know, having story cohesiveness across 90 or 100 pages. And
yeah,
if you're talking about writing an entire season of television where all these story threads have to interact and tie off and have satisfying arcs, like, I can't even imagine how you break something that big.
I forgot where my shorts were this morning. So I get it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I get what you're saying.
Fucking A.
If you had to binge a Star Trek right now, what are you reaching for? What are you pulling off of the virtual shelf?
I mean, I'm always down to rewatch a whole bunch of TNG.
Yeah. So. It's funny how that answer remains the same.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just my happy place, you know? I can't help that.
Wendy, are you watching much Star Trek anymore for pleasure? Did we ruin it for you?
Yeah, I'll still watch TNG every once in a while. And I've had to watch all the movies because I didn't really know the movies all that well before I started working with you guys.
Wow. Did you do that on the clock or?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like, did we have to pay for that?
Mm-hmm.
Jesus Christ. God damn it! Oh, God! We worked so hard for this money! And you're just spending it watching TV and movies?
It's kind of my job.
$12 buckets of popcorn hitting the Amex?
Yeah! Ben. Ben. You're completely welcome to do that.
I like the fancy popcorn, so.
Hell yeah.
I'm lightheaded after that one. Yeah, it does feel weird. Like, occasionally I will put on, like, a TNG, like, if I'm, like, on vacation or something, or...
That's the best, right? Someplace far away, and, like, I don't have cable, but, like, you get a weird channel that, like, BBC America, I feel like, shows TNG all the time. That's the best.
Totally. It rules. Let's do our next question.
This one's from Pit Baster. Which Star Trek series would you give the Muppet treatment to, and which actor would you keep? Bonus points for casting other characters as Muppets.
Okay. So this is, we're replacing everybody on a series with Muppets except for one human actor.
That's my takeaway, yeah.
I think Lower Decks is disqualified from this question.
I mean, like, original series seems like it would be very funny to watch Shatner around, but have Muppets playing all the other characters and he has to be serious around them.
I mean, I was going to choose the same, but it's DeForest Kelly is the only human actor.
My God, man.
Okay, so I'm going to make Kirk Fozzie-Bear in that instance.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have, I think Spock is Kermit. I think Kermit would be kind of a funny Spock.
The green blood and the green felt, I think, is a nice combination there.
It's beautiful.
Gonzo as Chekhov.
Sadly, Gonzo is Chekhov.
Yeah. I'm going to do a little bit of a gender swap here. Miss Piggy as Sulu.
Oh, I was going to say Scotty is Miss Piggy.
Oh, okay. I like that. Both have fun freakouts, and that's kind of like the main thing I love about Miss Piggy.
Yeah.
Okay, then who's Sulu in that context?
God.
Dr. Teeth?
You could say Chekhov and Sulu are Statler and Waldorf in a fun way, because they're always sitting together.
Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Go to warp at factor 6. That guy's got a warped mind, if you ask me. Oh!
Okay, now you guys, there's a lot of curiosity about this one, so audio question from the Discord once again.
Hey there, my name is Zane, and I just wanted to express some appreciation for the pod. Ben, Adam, and the Greatest Trek crew, you've been a delight and a great source of laughs over all the years. I still laugh out loud at every episode. I have to ask, where exactly did Hole come from? I help maintain a list of the drops on the wiki, and it's been driving us nuts. And you often have people in the Discord ask about it. So any light you can shed there would be much appreciated.
Wow.
Thanks for all you do. Can't wait to see what's next. Live long and prosper.
Wow. Zane has a gravelly voice.
Wendy, what are the guesses? Have people guessed about where it comes from?
Yeah, from what I've seen, people think that it's you doing your Kevin Uxbridge impression.
No, that's definitely not it.
I think some people, you know, correctly identified Arnold Schwarzenegger.
That part is correct.
But then I've never seen anyone guess with more specificity than that.
There's no Chakotaya for transcripts of all of the things that Arnold Schwarzenegger has appeared in, and you can't just search for the terms.
Is this a trade secret? We're not going to get the A on this one?
I'm trying to decide. whether or not I want to let this out of the bag. Yeah, I'll just go ahead and say it. It's Fuck You, Asshole from Commando.
Fuck you, asshole.
Fuck you, asshole.
The way Arnold Schwarzenegger says so many things, like this is a thing that we discovered and leaned into on our hit war movie podcast, was like whenever you did a Schwarzenegger film, the impressions were a very fun aspect to those episodes. And the way he would say "hurl" when calling someone an "s-hurl," for example, is just amazing. And like, my favorite Schwarzenegger impressions are not the broad ones where, you know, they're like the most popular lines from his movies.
Yeah.
It's like when he's trying to say normal things and he puts his own spin on it, like that's just the best.
Yeah. I've never found a way to use this clip, or maybe it may actually have gotten into the show at some point, but one of my favorite Schwarzenegger lines is in that movie where it's all about cloning and somebody clones him, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
At the end, when he's about to kill the bad guy, he says like, "Hey, why don't you clone yourself while you're still alive so you can go fuck yourself?" And I just think about the way he says clone.
Yeah, that's the
all
best.
All the time. It's very similar to her.
Yeah. I love it. I love it.
Thanks, Zane. Hey, Zane, next time, don't butter us up so much in the question. Give me a break. This is a serious show.
All right, one more question.
I can't believe we gave away like our biggest trade secret. What do we have now if we don't have her?
I don't know.
We're going to have a whole conversation about whether that gets edited out, right?
Okay, good call.
Days.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should just blurp it. You know what? That is actually, maybe that's an addendum to that question, is why we pronounce things the way that we do. Is there even an answer to that question? I don't think so. It's like what makes each other laugh.
Yeah.
It also like mostly begins with me saying something wrong. Like I'm often mispronouncing things and then I'm just doubling down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and making Miriam the thing that I say.
We've committed to Six Bay. We've committed to Miriam. Yeah. We've committed to, I think Elephant of Surprise has a lot of support from the viewers as a thing we could say wrong going forward.
My favorite is Birdie, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Do you have any idea where that came from?
I thought it was from I Got a Great Big Birdie.
You know what?
But maybe not.
I think Birdie predated the Rutherford line, but the Rutherford moment like galvanized it as a thing.
Yeah. Now when we talk about birdies, there's only one way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the way. This is the way we talk about birdies. I got a great big birdie. I love the transcription too. Like when the transcription comes through and it says birdie, like a bird. Makes me happy every time.
Yeah. Hello, birdie.
Yeah.
Okay, last question, you guys. This one, I don't know how to say this person's name here, but I think it's going to be Samus K-Y? Mm. Samusky? If you were going to jake a shuttle, what type of shuttle would you jake?
Wow.
Oh, I'm going runabout.
Well.
I cut you off,
Does
Ben.
That even count as a shuttle, though? Like that's got multiple rooms.
You know what? That's true. You can't buy an RV on a car dealership lot.
Yeah. You need a special license class to drive one of those, you know?
Shit.
So we've got the Previa, we've got the bunk bed, we've got the Brat class shuttle.
Just tell them it saves you money, buster.
Mm-hmm. There's a couple of variations of the bunk bed, I think. There's bigger and smaller versions of those really angular ones. And then we've got like original series Galileo shuttle.
Sure.
We've got the kind of sporty looking ones in Disco. We've got the sporty redo of the original series ones in Strange New Worlds. We've got a lot of options here.
Yeah. We've got the taxi that drops Picard off at the Vasquez Rocks.
Sure.
Taxi shuttle.
Taxi shuttle. I mean, we've got movie shuttle, right? Like whenever Kirk and the gang are getting some beauty shots of the entrepreneur from space dock.
You know what? That's such a great answer. It's movie shuttle you've got the chills the whole time.
Yeah, you've got goosebumps in it.
They keep that thing cold for a reason.
You've got goosebumps all over your birdie. You're not in danger. You're not getting snatched by Romulans on your way to a conference or something.
Yeah, you're nice and safe and cold in there looking at your brand new ship.
Yeah, look at that thing. Out those nice clean windows.
That sound nice. Do you think the shuttles that operate inside a starbase are like super stripped down? Like you're not taking those outside the base, so they don't come with a lot of the fixtures that you'd get in like a Previa style shuttle or whatever.
Right, like not warp capable, not armed.
You don't need the horsepower.
You don't need shielding.
No.
Everything's pretty safe.
No, it's like if you ever go to like a depot where semi trucks are picking up freight or whatever, there's like
all the time
the tug trucks.
Mm.
The tugs out there, you could barely call them semi trucks. They're just like little trucks.
Yeah.
That's what they have inside the starbase.
Right. Yeah. I like it. I think that's the answer. If we're going to steal a shuttle, we want to here's the thing. They're taking out all that stuff about defense and warp capability and whatnot. They're putting it in to the interior fixtures. It's very comfortable in there.
Oh, man. You know you're getting like a nice espresso machine in there.
It's a plush interior.
Yeah, it's some tucked velvet, perhaps. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the good stuff. That's what you want.
Good answer. So, Starbase shuttle.
Starbase shuttle.
Goosebump shuttle is what we're going for.
Goosebump class shuttle.
Yeah, that's a brand new class we just christened here on the show.
Oh man, fun. Well, thank you so much, Wendy, for gathering all these questions, and thanks to the Friends of DeSoto for leaving 5-star reviews to ask them, and thanks to the Discord for putting together a bunch of questions that got recorded like that. That's awesome.
Yeah. We should do this from time to time. This is fun.
Nice to hear people's voices.
Yeah.
I think it's been like 29 straight weeks of new Star Trek, though. So
yeah,
this is the first little break we've had to do something like this. So I'm really glad people sent fun questions in.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Wendy, do you want to sit in with us while we do these priority one messages?
Yeah, I'm going to mute myself and then look at you judgingly.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Adam, our first priority one message is from Robbie, Ski, and Patrick, and it's to Varlin, a.k.a. Varvin, a.k.a. Colin. It goes like this.
Varlin, you are a man of special conscience. I hope you have a happy birthday and can't wait to celebrate at the next Cousins Weekend at the Last Resort, which I have recreated to look like the lake house Rashan and I shared on Delta Rana 4. We won't just kill one beer or 100 or 1,000. We'll kill them all. All beers. Everywhere.
Wow. Ben S. Kevin, a very specific request there.
Yeah.
Can't help but feel a little hurt, but I understand. Ben does great impression work on this show.
I think your Kevin is my favorite of the two, though, Adam.
I love the phonetic message, though. That's really nice.
That was spelled out. I did barely any of the lifting on that.
All the sibilances were pronounced.
Yeah.
It's great.
We missed the date requested on this by 2 months, so sorry about that, Varlin and Robbie, Ski, and Patrick. But I hope you, if it already happened, I hope you're not dead from drinking all those beers.
Oh, I'm sure they're fine.
Yeah.
Ben, our second priority one message is from Gabe of Starbase 69. Wendy, you can say it.
Nice.
And this message is to the Gatist generation. That message goes like this. Everybody knows that Ben and Adam will not be covering Stargate SG-1. But what my theory presupposes is that they could be bribed to play the SG-1 drop from the episode of TGD. And that is number 161, A Boronite Bouquet. This is a great request because it gives us exactly where to find it.
Yeah, yeah. We just have to listen to that one episode all the way through and find whatever drop that Gabe is talking about.
Do you remember it?
I don't.
I don't remember it.
Yeah. Again, it flows out of the ear holes the second it happens.
Do you remember it, Wendy?
I do remember it. That was Rob Adler, because I dodged that Stargate bullet with giving him
awesome.
giving him the edit, and he did a great job. So, yeah, we'll pull that one out of the ether.
Colonel.
Yeah, Colonel. Yeah.
We are being hailed.
Open the iris.
We are being hailed.
Code 3 alert.
It's SG-1.
Yeah.
SG-1.
You are incorrect.
It's SG-1.
Colonel Jack O'Neill.
SG-1.
Silence. Very fun. Well, if you'd like to get a Priority One message on the show, head to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. Set it up today. We'd really appreciate it. Okay, well, I don't think we have any Edward Larkins on a show like this Q&A, so we'll let Wendy take it from here. Wendy, drop some credits on these people, why don't you? Thanks for joining us, by the way.
Yeah, it was so fun to do this together.
It was really, really fun. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
The Greatest Discovery is an Uxbridge Shimoda podcast on the Maximum Fun Network. It's hosted by Ben Harrison and Adam Pranica. It's produced and edited by me, Wendy Pretty. Next week on the show, we've got the Larkin Awards for Season 1 of Star Trek Strange New Worlds, so come back and join us for that. As always, we want to say thanks to Adam Ragusea for all of the original music that he made for this show. If you don't already know about what he does, he's got a podcast and a YouTube cooking channel, and he talks about a lot of interesting things, so go get subscribed. And thanks to Bill Tilly. He manages all of the social media for Uxbridge Shimoda. Use the hashtag GreatestDiscovery to talk about the show online, and make sure you're following @GreatestTrek on Instagram and Twitter. There's a new members-only bonus feed where you can get Uxbridge Shimoda bonus content all by itself if you're a member. That's at MaximumFun.org/DeSoto. If you're interested in supporting The Greatest Discovery, you can become a member at MaximumFun.org/join. $5 a month or more gets you access to all of the network's bonus content, and it makes you a big part of how this show gets made. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week with more of The Greatest Discovery.
You know what's crazy is watching these credits happen right in front of us.
She's doing it. Wow.
It's incredible. She's running.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.